Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Real Expat Wives of Arabia. I am going to quickly introduce my next guest. I have been waiting to get her on to the show for an interview, and I'm just so happy. This is the famous, amazingly talented Allison Redman with Allison Redman Photography. If you all are listening and are familiar with our specific community and compound here in Saudi, you are probably well familiar with her as getting a family film done by her, or a photo session, family photo session, engagement photo session, maternity photo session is, I think it's a rite of passage. So it's just so significant. We had the privilege of her doing a family film for us. We wanted to really capture the season of time when all three girls were here under one roof, still going to school here on our compound. It was right before Abby left for boarding school. We knew the dynamics of our family was going to change drastically, and her doing that family film for us is just so precious to us. We will forever cherish it because it just kind of captured a moment, a wrinkle in time for us. And if you go to her website and watch some of her family films, you will most certainly shed a tear or two because they're just so beautifully captured. And her attention to detail and how she can kind of encapsulate the whole family with, you know, the parents and the kids and the dynamic between everybody in between all that. And on top of that, we just had all our girls come back for the Christmas holiday, Christmas and New Year's, and they all flew in, and we were able to nail her down for a desert photo shoot, which is also just kind of a rite of passage, I guess you could say. If you're here in the Middle East and you haven't had a desert photo shoot or a family film done by Allison, you absolutely need to. The dune shoot we just did on the 22nd, and it was just amazing. I think the day that we picked and we're out there, the weather was absolutely perfect. We did have some wind, but it was totally manageable. The sun was out, the winter solstice moon was out. It was just a gorgeous day, and being out there in the desert is so surreal and serene and so spiritual in a way. So it was just a really awesome time, and because our girls were older, we were able to do some fun, more dramatic type things, which she really enjoyed. So no matter the age, she is well prepared. She is so professional. She brings the water. She's got her hiking pack, and she knows those dunes like the back of her hand. So she will quickly orchestrate and guide the shots. And I just can't even imagine little children out there and the way she can just maneuver and juggle everything. And it was just so awesome being able to experience that. So we are waiting on our prince anxiously for the desert shoot, but even more so just getting to know her story and her journey prior coming to Saudi, and then you know, all the little tidbits as well with, you know, her family and the children, and you know, her specific story with her and her husband Andrew has been so delightful to learn more about her and her story. So I hope you guys enjoy it just as much as I had. And I hope you guys have a great holiday, no matter what it is you're celebrating. And enjoy. God bless.
Allison?
Hello.
Oh, there she is. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going. Thanks so much for taking time to do this.
Oh, you know, I'm excited.
You're a busy woman.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for asking.
I know. It's been hard to tie you down. I think I waited, though. Like, I think I waited until, I don't know. I was just like, I'm going to wait till I ask Allison if she wants to be on.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I know you're like a legend around here. So
I don't know if that's the case, but you're very kind.
To be able to like promote in any way, shape, or form is, I honestly, it's one of my biggest joys about doing this podcast. Because if anyone has, you know, something going on or an online presence, I love being able to provide that, and then it gives more traffic. So,
anyway, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll tell us all about it. But what I like to start with is just your backstory. Like, you know, who were you like prior to coming to Arabia? Like, who was Allison?
I know. Isn't it crazy? We were all such, I feel like a different. Lot of us were such different people than we are now. And right. I've lived here, we're in our 12th year here. So it's like, I'm such a different person than I was before we came, which is insane.
I know. So you guys were, you were in Texas though, right?
Yes. Yeah. We were in Houston. My husband is, we were both music teachers. So I was a high school band director at a high school in Texas, and before that in Kentucky. So I've taught in, I taught in both private and public schools, and high school band directing, football games and everything. And then my husband did the same thing, except he did kind of the middle school level, middle school band and choir. And so that was our professional lives before we moved to Saudi.
So then when you guys were hired, you guys both weren't hired as teachers, right?
Well, I think we both went in hoping that there would be teaching jobs. And, the ironic thing is I was more qualified than him because I had taught longer at that point than he had, because he was finishing up his master's, but he was male. And at that point, the rules were as such that the male got the job first over the female, just because of the, you know, this. I think that has subsequently changed, but that was the case back 12 years ago. He got the job.
You mean as opposed to both being hired at once?
Well, there was only one music job in Ras Tanura. And so even though I was, you know, technically more experienced, hired him, but it was actually really good. I didn't get all wigged out about it, because I had loved my job. We were actually quite happy in Houston, and we had been married for 9 years at that point. We didn't have kids. I was like, well, maybe this is time to start thinking about having kids, and that'll give us, you know, time to change my focus and be able to be more intentional at home. And so, yeah, I was like, great, you take the job. I won't.
Okay. So you were kind of like at peace with it all.
Yeah, exactly. And so we ended up having all three of our kids here eventually.
Was there anything in particular about your relocation that you can like, it was a smooth, there was nothing like janky or crazy? Was there anything crazy? Like, I don't know, any holdups or hiccups or just like selling, you know, like I had to sell, I sold my home, I sold my cars, like I got rid of everything. And some people just are like, no, we'll hang on to stuff and just kind of go there. And like, we literally just like every tie that we had, we were just like, bye.
No, I get that. I think we were similar to you, but the only maybe difference is that I grew up as a kid, as a third culture kid. Uh-huh. So I was born in Malaysia. I lived there the first 11 years of my life. So when we got this job opportunity for Andrew, I was like, yeah, let's do this. Like, I grew up overseas. I want this. I love the adventure. I love the travel. Huh. So he had never done any of it, but I was really excited to, you know, do this again, what my parents had done for us. I remember how like special my childhood was in Malaysia. And I just, I knew, I didn't have kids at that point, but I knew that if we were ever to have kids, I wanted the same thing for them. And Andrew knew that. We had been, like I said, we had been married 9 years at that point. I think when we started dating, I was like, dude, don't marry me if you don't want to live overseas. Like, I wanted to do the expat thing. Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he was like, Georgia boy. And he's like, what? Like, okay.
Yeah. Like, he's definitely the one on for the ride. Wow.
Yeah.
Good
thing
he had you.
Yeah. I mean, but he's taken to it like a fish in water. Like, he's just so, we love it.
I mean, he's so like, he's so easygoing.
Yes.
And just go with the flow kind of guy.
So like, I had that expat background. And so when, you know, the big move to Saudi happened, like, I feel like I had a little bit of an idea of
what it was to move overseas, to live overseas, even though I was a kid. I knew the flexibility that was needed and involved, and it's been an adventure.
Right. Yeah. So what was your first impression upon, you know, landing here and getting here and like your first few days and weeks, what was that like for you?
I remember rolling down the car window, like when our taxi dropped us off, and it was like walking into somebody's mouth, like the humidity level. I had never experienced humidity, and I grew up in Southeast Asia. Like there's humidity there. I'd never experienced humidity like that.
What month was it?
It was August. August 5th we arrived. It was horrific. Horrific. Anyway, people are always like, oh no, it's not humid in Saudi. I'm like, where we live, it is. So it's, yeah, that was surprising.
Desert. They're like, oh, it must be dry heat. I'm like, uh-uh, right. Girl. No, it's wet. It's wet.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a shock. But we didn't have kids, so I feel like our transition was really easy compared to a lot of people. You come here with kids, that's a huge deal. And so I always have such empathy for people who have to do that, because that's not a joke. We were lucky. We were just, you know, we'd been married for a while and we were just on a little adventure, and I met my best friend the first day, Aaron, you know, the first day we got together. What's nice about Aramco.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We met the first day. It was really, the teachers, when they bring teachers over, they tend to kind of keep you together so that you know, can make a friend group. And that was the number one thing that was wonderful, was that we kind of had a little built-in support group with the people that were with us.
Yeah. And yeah. The teacher crew is tight, and it's very family. It's very.
And Aaron and I, my best friend, Aaron, she and I had both been working up until the minute we got on the flight. And so we were both not going to work now.
Right.
And that's a big change for an expat wife, perhaps, if that's going through that. Like that was a big identity change for us. Like, you know, you identify sometimes your worth even with your job. Right.
Oh, and God. Yeah.
And so it was very odd to like go to these teacher events. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would introduce Andrew and then they would say, hi, who are you? And then like nothing. And I just really wigged out by that. Like I had nothing to say. Like, what are you doing? Oh,
nothing.
I don't know.
Nothing. Yeah. What are you doing? Nothing. I can tell you how many people ask me, like, what do you do over there?
And I'm
nothing.
And I felt so like, it was like, it made me mad how much it bothered me. Like, I didn't like that about myself, you know, like I shouldn't be bothered by this. And I was, and anyway,
can't I just be like, exist for like a season, you know, and just kind of like, be? Cause like, you really don't know what you are, and you have to like resettle and reconfigure and reconvene your existence, and then, you know, there's a uncomfortableness with it, but then you kind of, you know, which leads me into like my next question for you. It's like, it leads you into these spaces of creativity or spaces of purpose you couldn't really explore prior. And so like, if you care to share you know, how the photography thing started for you, you know, if you don't have to, but that's kind of like a big deal. I know when it comes to me speaking with you and my experience with you is like,
right.
Like, were you into photography prior? Like, did it kind of birth out of you coming into this new space?
Yeah. So I had been into photography since childhood.
Okay.
My dad is really into nature photography, and he had Nikons around our house, really nice Nikons, like throughout my childhood. And I would, you know, play around with them. And I always just loved watching him do that. And then when you graduate from college, people give you money and gifts. And I used all my money from graduating from high school, to purchase like a really good camera. Back in the day in high school, I was, you know, editor of the yearbook. So it was just I loved it. But then once I, you know, became a music teacher, a band director, it's very hard to do two things well. So I did that thing well. And then I had to just kind of put that hobby aside.
Mm-hmm.
But once we moved to Saudi and I wasn't, you know, a teacher anymore, I had time for sure. And it was just a matter of practicing and getting better at it, but I ended up taking a lot of courses, specifically in the videography department. And so I added that to my kind of list of things that I, you know, learned how to do and really enjoyed doing. And yeah, it was the time factor, exactly what you said. You had a little more time. Honestly, now that I just turned 40, now that I'm 40 and I've owned a business now for 7 years, my own business. And it's fascinating to me to look back on like those high school days when I obviously loved photography. And like, I think about being told like, oh, you're not going to make money. Oh, you're not going to do a profession that will be a guaranteed income. I, you know, I felt like that was the messaging from my schooling, from, you know, people in your life that are important. I felt like that was kind of a messaging, whether or not they said it flat out, I think it was just kind of implied.
Right.
And yeah. I feel like now going back, I would have told my high school self, my gosh, go to some art school,
right?
Get a degree, get a business degree.
I know.
Or get, yeah, every day I wish I had a business degree, get a business degree or go get another, get a degree in photography or something in the arts that you want to do.
Right.
And you can, if you work hard enough and you're good at the marketing and the business, you work your ass off, you can be successful. Yes, it takes a lot of work, but you can be successful at it. And I felt like I loved teaching, but I think I was meant to do photography. So
yeah. So if everyone's listening, so this is famous Allison Redmond, and her website is, oh wait, I was going to remember this and I should have this written down, but your website,
you're good.
Your website
it's
is
AllisonRedmondPhotography.com.
And then you have your Instagram account, and I will put all this in the show notes. But, my husband and my girls, we've had the awesome privilege of doing our own family film with you, but prior to Abby leaving for boarding. And so we were like, you know what, let's capture like this really great time, this really just season of like us being, because people do not realize how much shit changes once your kids leave. Like it is a huge, huge transition. And then, you know, and it's like, even if, and there's different, again, there's different things within that. Like she was our oldest, so she left first, but we still had the twins around, you know, so it's all different. You might have like one off and then like, and then when they all go, that's like a whole nother freaking story.
I can't even imagine. It's like, it's like a whole nother chapter of your life.
So like capturing that was so special to us. And we like, we just cherished that video. And we were so grateful, you know, like you were here and you had that skill and you were offering that service. And just what a niche that you have found for families here.
It is. It is absolutely a niche. Yeah. And I'm excited that you're coming up for a session too.
I know. So she's got, anyone that else has listened, like she does these amazing desert dune shoots, and it's not even that far because we're in the Eastern Province. I'm not even sure where we're going, but it's somewhere out there. We're not desert. And like we do not travel. We don't venture out much. So
Yeah.
It's somewhere out there in the dunes, and every family does it. It's like, if you don't do it, it's like, why? Like every family needs to have it. It's like a rite of passage.
It's amazing. It is. Yeah. And like, I noticed that people tend to book them either right when they arrive or when they're about to leave. It's interesting. Aww. Unless they're having a baby, but yeah, that tends to be the majority of the bookings is like, oh, we just got here. Oh my gosh, this is going to make an epic Christmas card, you know?
I'm so excited. And I have like so much to share with you, like apart from this video. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's coming up in December for us. We're stoked. And then, and then through COVID, I was like, this girl is hustling. Like I just respect the hustle. So through COVID, you were doing school portraits. For what is it? 2-3 years? I don't even know. I didn't even have any school pictures. So
I know.
Like, okay.
I know.
We can work with this.
I just was like, we're going to put you in a nice safe space outdoors where I'm pretty far away from you. I'll use a lens that's far enough away and I'm going to take your kid's picture. It's going to look like a school picture, but better.
And way better. Like when I saw them, I was like, oh, these are so much better than the school picture.
Yeah. Actually, that's been kind of fun to see how that's like developed. I'm doing one Aramco school now. Like I do the Utalia's, all of their school pictures now, which is awesome. Like it's been really fun to kind of.
They'd be.
I know.
Too. Yeah, I just love it. It's just, I so respect it. It is so, hats off to you, girl.
It's fun. I get to make a lot of like poop jokes and fart jokes and ice cream jokes and, you know, anything to get a really natural smile.
So like in the midst of this whole Saudi experience, you landed with zero children and you now have three.
Yeah. Crazy, right? So
you had, just like me, it's so similar because I talked to another teacher yesterday who's a twin mama. So like you, yeah. But you were like me where you had one. Well, we all three were. We all had one and then had twins behind the single. But you guys experienced that while in Saudi. I had moved here. My twins were already in first grade. But like you guys got pregnant, did the whole like care here and then labor here too.
So, well, and not just that, like we have, all of our children are IVF kids. Like we have fertility issues and we are not able to conceive naturally. Like we have to have.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm so happy to talk about it because the more people that know and we can normalize the conversation, the better. Like,
thank you for sharing.
Yeah. We went to Dubai and for both rounds and they, kept my eggs in storage there and we had all of the babies through a really highly rated IVF clinic in Dubai.
Yeah, I've seen, even here in Saudi, I've seen a lot of like, wow, I was like amazed at how many people actually were being seen by fertility specialists because that's surprisingly something. I mean, I don't know if it, you know, because they do pride themselves on like having children. So I just found it interesting how fertility specialists like were so big here in the Middle East.
Yeah, for sure. I would say a huge percentage of my clients are IVF clients, like of my Saudi clients use IVF. Yeah. It's very normal. We, at that point along, you know, 12 years ago, we chose to go out of the country, but I think it's probably okay to do it here now. At that point, we didn't like the ratings of the clinics here. So we chose to do it in Dubai, but
sure. But I mean, it's like a skip, hop and a jump. I mean, it's still
easy,
right? It's still, but yeah, I mean, Saudi's caught up a whole bunch in the last 5-7 years. It's been insane.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I still feel like they got a long way to go personally, but they're, they're getting there, girl. They're getting there. They're trying. Do you have anything to say about like your prenatal care or like your delivery or anything like that while here?
The prenatal care was complicated because I was an IVF. It influences everything. You're automatically high risk. I never had visits nearby. I always had to travel an hour and it was a lot more appointments than like a normal pregnancy.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I had a massive like bleed issue for both pregnancies in about 7 weeks, which was super scary.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. I think it was, again, probably the cocktail of the drugs from IVF, because you're on IVF drugs until about 20 weeks. Like when you're pregnant, you're still on them until 20 weeks. Like your body is really hormonally jacked up because they're trying to make things happen.
Keep it stuck and like growing.
Viable. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I was on all sorts of stuff and it was interesting to, you know, have a pregnancy in a foreign country. But then I kept thinking, my mom did this. My mom gave birth to three kids in Malaysia.
Right.
Like she can do it. I can do it. A lot of people do this. Yeah. And I was with one of the specialists in Khobar and I was really happy, but the big thing difference between, I don't know how this is in other countries, but with the USA, you tend to know who's going to be delivering you. And that is not the case here, or maybe it is now, but it wasn't when I gave birth.
Interesting.
Yeah, you just don't know if you're gonna, who's gonna be delivering your kids.
Well, so that was, I gotta weird. Say, so this is like probably very unique. Because you know, I had twins too. So when I go into labor with my twins, my water breaks. They had me scheduled for a C-section at 37 weeks.
Right.
I was like right at 36 weeks and Stasia's water broke. So
yeah,
she was on the bottom. Bella was on the top. And so the night before, Abigail had ran into my belly really, really hard. Like knocked the breath out of me hard. So we always say it was Abigail that caused Stasia's water to break. And then, so like the next morning, it's Father's Day and we're trying to go to we're taking Dave to like Denny's or something. I don't know, somewhere cheap because we were broke as hell. So
right.
I was like, oh, like this isn't pee. Like what? And every time I stood up, it would just like flush out. And I'm like, babe, my water's broke. And so we're like rushing to the hospital. It's a Sunday. It's Father's Day. My doctor was not in the country. She was like on a missions trip somewhere. And then
of course,
when I go to the hospital that I'm going to, the hospital that covers for her doesn't go to that hospital. So we still go to that hospital. And then my friend who had been on bed rest because she had her water break like really, really early. And she, that happens with her. So like, so they had her already here at the same hospital, like on bed rest. So that day that I'm coming in, bum rushing them with my twins, she was taking in as well to take hers out. And so we're side by side in the OR because
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
And then she, so her doctor had to like leave her scheduled, you know, C-section to come help me deliver because my twins were freight trains coming. I mean, Stasia was literally halfway hanging out upside down by the time I got to the hospital. So like, so yeah, so I don't even know. I didn't even know this lady. She was not my doctor.
Yeah,
I had no idea what was happening. It happened so fast. Like, they just flew. And they kept asking me, are they both head down? Are they both head down? I'm like, yes, they're both head down. They're both head down. And so
you're lucky. Yeah,
it was like, it was the most intense, fastest thing in my life. I had no time for pain medicine. Like, not, there was no time for anything. Like, the nurse looked at me. She, once she realized there was like no time for any epidural or anything, she just looked at me and she goes, I need you to breathe. And, and I was like, okay.
Like, you got this. You got this.
Yeah. And so even to this day, Dave will never let it go. He's like, you had twins with no pain medicine. You can do anything. Blah, 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 blah. Like, he always uses that as an excuse when I'm like, sorry for myself.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well done, you.
Yeah, I mean, there was no choice. I mean, I literally should have just—I should have just had him at home, saved the bill. You know, it was like,
oh my god,
it was wild.
Yeah. I liked the part of delivery here that was the midwives part. Like, I thought that was really cool. Like, I don't think that, at least where I was in Houston, if I had, you know, given birth in the States, midwives are just not as common, you know. As part of the delivery, but that was a big part of the delivery here. If you have a natural birth, it's or a non-C-section, you have midwives and they're amazing. They're so they're so like they know what they're doing. It's incredible.
Interesting. I did not know that. I think if you're in the States, you have to hire like if you want a doula or like a birthing coach or someone extra,
That sounds right.
Pay out of pocket.
I filmed one birth in the U.S. and the girl had, or it was my sister actually, she had hired a doula for that. So they, like the doula, the husband and myself were the ones in the room for the birth. And it was pretty incredible to watch that too. Different than a midwife, but still amazing.
Yeah. Birthing videos are so insanely intimate. Like that is something if I could do, I wish I would have had my babies at home. In a, you know, get the blow up tub or whatever.
Yes.
And I would have done that. I have a friend that all she does is birthing photography and birthing.
That's amazing.
That's all she does. And yeah. And it's just every video is so, so touching. Oh, maybe for my grandkids, I'll make sure my girls do it. be like calling up Allison. Can you come do my birthing? Yeah. Grandchild's birthing videography.
How do you feel about a GoPro under the water?
So
just kidding.
So like you, so you still do stuff back in Texas. You do work over there, and then you and I know you've done some like pretty high profile stuff here too. Like I think you did like a royal princess.
Yeah, wedding? I've done a couple of princess weddings. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Wow. I divide my year because of the weather in Saudi. That's the honest answer. It's too hot in Saudi in like, you know, late June, July, August, basically, to work. I mean, I guess I could do stuff inside, but everybody's just gone. It's awful.
Yeah,
you know this. And so we are from the US, so we fly back to the States just to, because it's summer break for my husband and we do the family thing, but I have USA clients over the summer months. And so they hire me for family films. I don't do a lot of photography in the States now. I do only family films there. And so they're in all over the place, Michigan, New Hampshire, Seattle, you name a state. Like I schedule it. So throughout the summer, I'm flying to these clients, they're flying me to them, and then I do their film and then I come home. Sometimes I do a couple in a certain area. Like, it just depends how I'm hired. And then that's my USA shooting schedule. When I'm in Saudi, I get back to Saudi, like we all do for the beginning of the school year in August. Mm-hmm. It's still too hot to shoot.
Right.
But now I've got all this work I edit.
And editing. So
I work on all I work on all these films. In fact, today I just finished editing the 7th film from the summer, which is amazing. I'm feeling very good about that. And so, so throughout the hottest part of the Saudi year, I'm editing, get those off to the clients. And then like this weekend, I have 3 photo shoots booked. And so now my photo shoot year starts from, you know, beginning of October all the way through about early June is when I shoot in Saudi, photo sessions. And occasionally I'll get hired for a film. Like, I'm going to Europe in December for films. And so I'll do three there. But for the most part in Saudi, I'm doing photo shoots, and that keeps me super busy. And I love it. And I love that I kind of have different areas of focus throughout the year. And but yeah, I love the USA clients are amazing, and it's fun to get to kind of change things up a little bit from when I'm here in Saudi. My client base now is almost 60% Saudis, 40% expats. It started as 100% expats, obviously. And now it's really, I would say it's 50-50, depending on what the session is, 50-50 or 60-40. It's incredible. So I get to be with Saudi families almost weekly, which is amazing.
Oh my goodness. That is so great.
Cool. It's so amazing to just like be in their homes, meeting. And it's just it's a different vibe than the kind of negativity I sometimes hear from people. And, you know, I get to see the inner workings of life. And then, like you were saying, sometimes I get to do a wedding, which is really wild.
Oh my goodness. To be a fly on the wall for that. Oh my goodness.
They're nuts. The extravagance and the wealth. And like, I did one of the weddings at King Salman's Riyadh house. Like, it was just nuts.
My God. And it's very confidential, and you can't share much because it's just private.
You can't share anything. Like, one of the weddings, they like looked at my phone to make sure I hadn't secretly taken a picture or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, they're incredible. I have Saudi clients are private. If you look at my Instagram feed right now, you won't see a single Saudi client on it. But
do they ask you to not put that up?
In my contract, there's a thing they tick. Can I share? Can she share? Can she not? None of them tick it. No, okay. I never, ever get permission to share. But it is my biggest client base. You would not know it if you looked at my Instagram feed. No. It looks very not diverse.
That's so interesting.
But they still value the photography. They value what it is that's being captured. They just don't share it. They're very private. From living here. Yeah.
Yes.
It's important to them.
Yeah. That's
for their
privacy. It's so amazing to get invited into one of their, like, to be able to get into a Saudi's home, like an actual Saudi home. And then like, that's a big deal. That is a whole nother level of, and so because you have what you have, you've been able to experience that, is so awesome.
It's really neat. I've learned that when I go to a photo shoot, I need to go a little bit hungry because they always have like food for me, which is so sweet. And like coffee, I can't drink too much coffee that day because there's always like copious amounts of coffee and
dates.
They love sweets, like tiny sweets. And so there's always little sweets and little sandwiches and things. And it's always just so beautiful. And I mean, obviously I'm serving a certain, like my target demographic is middle to upper class people. That's who I'm marketing to. That's who I'm targeting. And so, you know, there is a certain look to some of their homes and a certain lifestyle, and there's all that that plays into it, but, they're still just, it's just so cool. I love seeing how the dads just love those babies and those kids. It's just, you don't see that when we're kind of out as much as you do a little bit, but it's just different when, you know, everybody's very proper and whatever, but it's a totally different game when you're in the house. They're just all in as parents.
Man, yeah, it's such an honor. So freaking cool.
Thanks.
So would this be your first kind of like job over in Europe? Like your first films that you've ever done in Europe?
Yeah,
besides your
I know.
Family.
Yes.
Like, wait, because you guys did that in Australia, didn't you?
Oh, we went to New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah, but that's not Europe. Yeah. But that's still really cool.
It was cool. Yeah. Yeah. This is my first hiring in Europe. A lady in Paris is flying me to do a film for her and her adopted little boy. I've actually done two films for her already in the US, and now she moved to Paris. So she's French. She's moved to Paris, back to Paris now. So she's having me come. And then I put out the word that I'd be in Europe. And I had two clients in Germany contact, or people, families in Germany contact me.
That is so, so awesome.
Yeah. So I'll be going to there.
I'm so like, can I be you in my next life? Oh my God. That's so
come
cool.
Be my assistant. You can come help me out. It'll
very
be fine.
Cool. Girl, I don't know. Gabby, what? You gotta be careful what you ask for. So you've been to New Zealand. What other countries have you guys been to
besides New Zealand? I feel like I'm kind of lame on this question because we got here and then we had babies. So yeah. And twins, as you understand, there was no movement when they were babies. Like we parked and
yeah.
Basically went to the US and we were like, what has just happened to us?
Yeah.
And then once the twins got old enough, guess what happened? COVID. And so, yeah, New Zealand was our last huge, like, that was our first hurrah with the twins. We're like, we're going to New Zealand. We stayed, you know, 8 weeks, 6 weeks there, and it was amazing. And then COVID happened, and so obviously that was what, 2 years of not traveling. And then anyway, we are trying to do that better now.
Okay. Have you guys I was just gonna say, you haven't been to Sri Lanka?
We have, yeah. We went to Sri Lanka last year, and the other part of this puzzle, which I always feel like I shouldn't have to justify, but like, we bought a cabin year and a half ago. I'm not sure when that was.
And you're like, we need to use it.
Right. Well, no, not even that. It was just like, you know, we're saving to purchase a cabin. And so we have been saving for a bit. So we bought a cabin, and now it's now an Airbnb, and that's been kind of an interesting journey and good, interesting, but it's in the summers, that's where it's in North Carolina. And that's kind of a home base. We're trying to make that a home base. You know, this, as an expat mom, like your kids are like, I don't know where I'm from.
Right.
And I remember that as, I remember that as a kid being like, I'm Malaysian. My parents were like, you're not Malaysian. I'm American, but I've been to Texas for 5 days. Like what? You know, you just, yeah. So we wanted to have a place that they could come to in the summers. And like last Christmas, we went home to the cabin. And so I'm not sure it feels like home yet, but it's beautiful and gorgeous and cool weather, and it's in the mountains, and you know, it's incredible. So that's, we're trying to make that an identity factor for our, you know, our TCKs, our third culture kids.
Yeah. I don't think people realize that either. If I would have, you know, realized how difficult it would be to kind of go back and not rent somewhere for the whole summer, or,
oh my gosh, so expensive.
You know, yeah, like that. And so I mean, we did hold on to our house, actually. We didn't sell the house right away. We had a renter, but they were long-term renters, so we couldn't use it anyways. And so I feel like that part we could have definitely have lined up a little bit more wiser because, it's either South Florida for my family or Houston for his. And even though Houston's way more, I mean, the what you get for your money there is so much better. Trust me, I tried talking my family out of buying because we just bought back in Florida again last summer.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
But I was like, are you guys sure you don't want to be in Texas? I know what you can get for the cost of what we pay for what we have in Florida. I know what I can get in Texas for that. And it's like, way.
I know. Houston, it's like people are like not batting an eye at these massive houses. I'm like, you understand that in the rest of the world, they aren't this big.
The bathrooms and I mean, everything is just so nice. I forgot like what I was getting to. But my point is like, I wish we would have so that was 7 years into us being here, 7, 8 years. Mm-hmm. You know, so it took us a while to like get our bearings and figure that all out because we've also been traveling like a motherfucker. I mean, you know, we have not held back on the travel ends. And so
I love it.
We're like, I love it. We have a splurge, and I'm glad we did because then the world shut down for a few years with COVID. And now it's just me and Dave now most of the time, and we try to fit in.
Go ahead.
Oh, so everyone's in a different position too when they come, right? Like we were just like young and stupid and still had like a ton of debt. Some people come here and this is their second freaking go around, right? They've already got like a retirement from wherever they were before. I mean, it's just like everyone's in different situations, you know, in terms of like how economically and like financially they, you know, that all that stuff plays out. So
yes, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And you've got that added factor of having kids that are, you know, not home now. And so the idea of being together doesn't have to necessarily involve travel. Like that is probably a really big deal. Like you want to be together a little bit.
I mean, yeah, like when the twins come back, they haven't been back since they left, which was 18 months ago. So when they come back, everyone's going to, and that's so funny too, when your kids, I don't know if you'll stay that long, but like when your kids go off and come back, everyone's like, they just trip out. Like if you see the girls, you're going to, well, you are going to see, you're going to be like, I can't believe how big, I mean, you follow my social media too.
So I see them online. Like, yeah. They're all grown up people now.
It's hilarious when you, these kids go off and come back a year later, six months, you know, year, 2 years, it's like, wow, they're so big now.
And also, I feel like it's an accelerated maturity thing with our kids, especially because of the lack of high school situation, having to go to boarding school. My husband says this all the time. He's a middle school teacher. He says these high school kids come back to say hi to me as their former teacher, you know, that go see the band director when they're back. And he's like, it's like talking to a college student, but they're not a college student. Like they are, you know, they're still young, but there's a maturity level of having kind of lived on their own and done their own thing. And he's like, it's so incredible when he talks to them. He's like, it's just so cool to see how they've blossomed and become their own people.
Huge jump from when he was, you know, seeing them in middle school. Huge jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Abby was like a little taken back at how people were so shocked. I'm like, Abby, you have to realize people haven't seen you. Like literally, it's just, you know, I was trying to explain to her that side of things. Like there, people are blown away because she was kind of like, what is wrong with people? I'm like, babe, they haven't seen you. Like it's a big change and you're so beautiful and big and grown. And it's like,
yes,
you know what I mean? Like you have curves now. Like you didn't have
curves,
you know, like things like that. It's just like, oh my goodness.
I love that. I'm excited if we're able to stay that long. I'm excited for our kids to do the boarding school thing. Like I feel like I would have been the kid that would have loved that as a kid growing up overseas, and I want that for them if we're here that long. We'll see. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, that was going to there's a lot of sacrifice in it. There's a lot of, again, you're separated and not under one roof. And so when you get those times and those breaks, I try to protect them fiercely.
Sure.
So there's a whole gist to it for sure. Rhythm. It's a new rhythm. It's a new evolution for the family for sure. It's just, it's crazy. There should be a lot of support groups, I think, for the moms.
You would think there would be.
Especially if it's like your only one, you know, you know, it's got to be tough. So, but if you could say what's your favorite thing about Saudi Arabia, what would you say that was?
What we're talking about, family time.
Not
that we had kids before, but I remember how much commuting time we had before we moved to Saudi, just on, you know, an hour commute every day one way and then back. And it's just, traffic was horrific in Houston. And and the fact that my husband's job allows him, like, I eat three meals a day with my children. I sit down at a table and we eat three meals a day together. My husband doesn't eat breakfast because he wakes up too late, but he eats lunch, Andrew, and dinner every day.
Yeah. Andrew, that's, you know what? That's my guy. That is my guy. Yeah. That would be so mean. I'd be like, sleep over food any day. Hell yeah.
Yeah. But I love that. Like we see each other. We are able to be a family unit. And that is just, that's a rare thing where we lived in Houston. It's when we're home there, it feels rushed and chaotic and a bit materialistic, if I dare say. And it's just
consumerism. It's all I can think of is consumer, 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 consumer. And I'm like, I hate this.
I love the slow. And granted, we don't really live in a city where we are in Rustenburg, but I love that our lives are quiet. I love that they're slow. I love that I like wig out if my kids have more than two activities a week. I'm like, no, it's a lot. Sorry, not doing it. You know, I love that aspect of it. And I'm in and out for work and stuff, and I'm working from home. And so that they have a hard time with that. They, like, Andrew works just as much as I do, but they don't see it, whereas they see me at my office. So that's a bit of a battle with them, but I love that I'm able to be there for meals, and we have an amazing nanny who helps us. And it's just, you know, life is slow but good here, and it's intentional, and I couldn't ask for anything more. Like, I am very content and grateful that we have that here in Saudi.
Yes, these are just such great reminders when the days get hard. Okay, so then what would be your least favorite thing?
I think the flexibility that is sometimes needed when you're encountering situations that are not logical. I really struggle with things that are not fair and logical. I don't know if you know Enneagram. I'm an Enneagram 1. Like, I want things to make sense, and I want them to be fair and logical. And it really bothers me when there's a rule or there's a policy that in
that
place
makes no
that
sense.
Has no logical purpose, but we're still doing it because somebody high up enough hasn't had the sense to be like, well, that's a dumb rule. Why are we doing that?
Yes.
It'll come. It'll get there. But like, I find
it's
myself,
slow.
Andrew makes a joke that like, I'm banned from the clinic here. I'm banned from like, like he's like,
you're not allowed.
I do a lot of yelling. Like, I just am not, I don't like how some things are. And I've just gotten more and more vocal the longer I've been here, especially with some of the hospital things and just the logic. I have a short fuse and a short temper for that kind of thing. And it's terrible. And I should probably work on it more.
Well, it's so good to know I'm not the only one. Holy cow. But sometimes you just gotta laugh. I mean, you just gotta laugh because
that's the way out of it.
You cannot, I mean, you can't make some of this stuff up sometimes. And when you're in the moment, you're like, okay, I'm coming off as a total bitch right now. But I literally have no way else to communicate this except in a bitchy way.
Right.
And then like the culture is very like, you don't do that in this culture. This culture is very controlled. And so like that kind of sets off other vibes when that happens. And then, and then it's like, they definitely want you to calm down, but they also do not like to be confronted or like embarrassed or called out. So then you have to like be really careful. And, you know, when you're angry about something and want to confront something, there's just a certain way to go about it, because this culture is very like, oh, hell, you just did not step to me with this. You know, things go a different way when you're like nice about something you're mad about, if that makes
100%. 100%. And there's an interesting element here of like, you have to be, if you are a timid person here, you're gonna get run over. Like, that's the other part of it. Like, you are able to talk. I can confidently talk my way into a lot of stuff that other people that might not be able to do, because they just don't have the whatever to do that. Like, you can also use that, and not in a mean way. I'm not saying like when I'm angry, like if you're told, no, we're not doing that for you, I'll be like, well, let's try. How about we do today? And, you know, and like, if you don't have that confidence factor here with certain things, I'm not talking about black and white things. I'm talking about like, if we're at the causeway and there's like, well, you need to go over there and get that done. I'm like, no, you're going to do it right now, because I know that you've done it for other people. That kind of an example, like, you need to have that confidence factor in
You're
this
like, no,
culture.
It's okay. You can do it. It's okay. Like,
I'll wait here. I'll wait here until you do it.
Yeah. La mafi. You do now. You do now. It's okay. I trust you.
Yeah.
So if you had like an advice, word of advice, I mean, it's kind of redundant, but like, if you had a word of advice, you know, about to move here, I mean, I can't tell you how many people, Riyadh for sure is like blowing up.
Many
jobs are coming. People are coming from a lot of Brits and a lot of Australians are coming to Riyadh.
My entire client base in Riyadh is Saudis and Brits for sure. Yeah.
I keep trying to find somebody through our expat group online on Facebook to get from Jeddah, because I have no one yet on this podcast from Jeddah, nor from Neom. But I know Neom, I have someone that I'm in contact with. She's like, I signed an NDA. So like, a lot of the Neom people can't even talk yet because
they're not family living over there right now anyway. It's just,
They are.
No, they don't have family set up because there's no schools yet. They have to live south in, is it Jeddah or somewhere else? And then they commute in or the husband works there on the
weekends. Oh, you mean like not on site site?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, on site site, because there's no school built. Like, it's so new, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the very, but man, if it's the next big thing, that is it. NEOM is going to blow this country up. Like, it is they've got the Oxygen project. They have the Red Sea project. They have, oh my goodness, it's just, it's incredible. So, I mean, if you could say anything to anyone debating about whether coming or not, do you have anything you want to tell them or advice?
I would just say come, but be aware that it's, I feel like it takes 3 years to feel like this is home, honestly. Okay. And some people don't give that's it that good. Long. They're like 6 months in. They're like, well, I no.
That's good.
You know, it, good. Yeah, yeah, I think honestly, I think it took us 3 years to kind of be like, oh, okay, we get how it works here. This is good. And finding your friend group and finding your people and realizing that those people can change too. And that's okay. It's those are all part of being an expat. But yeah, give it time.
Okay. That's really good. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to air this.
You're so sweet. This has been fun.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, people get so scared when I ask them to come on. They're like, I get so many no's. So I appreciate every single yes. You have no idea. And like, I just had someone reach out to me via Instagram yesterday and was like, hey, like, I just want to tell you I'm coming into, we're considering coming in and. Your podcast is so hot. I mean, those, I've just started getting like more of those within the last 6 months, and it's just been so great. So just to know you agreeing to do this for 1 hour of your time is really going to help a lot of people, and I just really appreciate you coming on here. I love being able to provide that platform. I have really no selfish purpose in this. It's just really just to help. I just felt like it was needed. That's all. Like, it was.
Aww, I appreciate that so much. Anything that can help people who are considering a big move is huge. I mean, I remember how much information that we're all trying to mine to figure out what it is that we're getting ourselves into. So this kind of thing is huge. It's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. And I guess I'll see you in December for our thingy.
Or run down some sand dunes. It's gonna be awesome.
Or I feel like it's too soon. I feel like maybe I should wait. I was going to send you like some kind of like ideas that I had.
Yeah, we got time. That's like 2 months away.
I know. You're like, I have way more stuff to do before that.
We're good. No, we're good. It's going to be awesome. I'm very excited. And you chose a good time of year. It's not going to be hot.
Yeah. I'm just praying it's not windy.
Yeah, it's November that tends to be more windy than December. So,
thank God. Okay.
Yeah, I think, and I keep an eye on it. Like I have shoots all weekend there, and on Sunday I check the weather, and then I let people know what the wind speed is and what to expect based on the wind speed. And so I always keep an eye on it.
Okay, cool beans. We are very good hands. I completely.
Yay.
Okay. All right. Well, you have a great day, and see you around camp.
All right. It was lovely to chat with you. This was fun, Kim. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I can't wait to listen back and edit and go through it. It's my favorite part is re-listening. Thanks, Allie. Have a great day.